How does PwC take your company to the leading edge? We bring the sharpest minds in tech to your team. So you can bring the ideas that will transform your business. We are passionate about your industry. So you can walk into any room with every advantage. We're with you every step of the way, so you can know you're headed in the right direction. At PwC, we build for what's next so you can get there now. Let's get started at pwc.com/us/leading edge.
This is The Rich Eisen Show.
Hey, everybody.
Can't get enough of The Rich Eisen Show? You're in luck. You can find us everywhere. Watch us weekdays on Disney Plus from noon to 3 Eastern. Miss the show? We've got a podcast so you can listen anytime. But here's the best part. Our YouTube channel. Subscribe at youtube.com/Rich Eisen Show and you'll never miss a moment. Now, on with the show.
This is The Rich Eisen Show.
You want to see something really scary?
Nobody around in the end zone.
He didn't run the route.
From The Rich Eisen Show studio in Los Angeles, today's guest, NFL Network insider Tom Pelissero, Colts tight end Tyler Warren, Basketball Hall of Famer Shaquille O'Neal, Academy Award winning actor Morgan Freeman. And now, it's Rich Eisen.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to this edition of The Rich Eisen Show. We are live on Disney Plus. We are live on the ESPN app, and we are live on ESPN Radio, presented by Progressive Insurance and SiriusXM Channel 80. We have got ourselves a heck of a show in store. We've got Tom Pelissero, my NFL Network colleague, first up in about 20 minutes' time. And boys, there are lots of breaking news, certainly from the state of football, Florida, to discuss with all of you, and we'll unpack that in a second. Tyler Warren, the revelatory rookie tight end of the revelatory 7-1 AFC leading Indianapolis Colts, joining us in the middle of this what's more likely Friday second hour, and then hour three. My goodness gracious. Shaquille O'Neal is first up, and then once we're done talking with Shaq, we will say hello to Oscar winner Morgan Freeman. That's how we're rolling here on this Halloween Friday. Chris Brockman, good to see you over there. How are you, buddy?
Rich, what's up, man?
You and I are the only one. I guess we're not in costume in a way. Although I am. Are you somebody today? Somebody who's ready to golf after today's show or something like that?
I'm dressed as an adult.
Okay. And Jason Feller, good to see you, Felly. Jason Momoa Feller.
You're Aquaman. Thank you.
Pardon me. You've got your trident next to you, and then I'll be honest with you, certainly when you strolled on the floor, if you stood up, we'd see another trident. So please stay seated, if you don't mind. Jason Feller, everybody, here on The Rich Eisen Show.
Speaking of being the adult, Chris, you might be right about
that. Wow.
TJ Jefferson, you are dressed as today. Who are you today?
Hey, one thing's for certain, two things for show. I'm Cam Newton, baby. Let's go.
Cam Newton, everybody. Good to see you.
Cam.
And I'll describe for the radio audience, I am dressed as a dad who just wants to be left alone.
A tired dad.
And stay at home and watch sports TV on Halloween night, like a game 6 of the World Series, for instance.
Right.
Okay.
But instead,
I'm dressed as a tired dad who needs a nap.
I mean, I brought extra Jason costumes for you.
It's all good. Thank you.
I will put the math
on.
Jason.
It's you with props. You've got a Kelsey. And
Kelsey
a hockey mask.
Rich, who do you want? Do you want the hockey mask or you want the Kelsey brother?
I'm good.
You know what? Give me the Kelsey.
It's celebratory, Rich.
No, that's okay.
It's our first it's all Halloween good. Here on Disney, you know?
Well, let's talk about who is not celebrating right now.
Some fish.
Well, I mean, the dolphins are technically a mammal.
True, not a fish.
Yes,
that's true.
But listen, the Miami Dolphins are 2-7. And when you're... You know, coach and front office is on a hot seat, and you go on Thursday Night Football and you lay an egg and you suffer your largest home loss in 4 years, 4+ years. Week 2 of the 2021 season is when the Buffalo Bills came in and waxed the Dolphins 35-0. When you have your third game with fewer than 10 points scored this year, and you only had one such game in the three previous years combined, what's going to end up happening is a, I guess, Halloween term, rolling head. And that does not belong to the head coach, Mike McDaniel. It belongs to the general manager, Chris Greer. An interesting choice by Stephen Ross, the owner of the Miami Dolphins today, telling Chris Greer, who's been with the organization since joining as a scout in 2000 and then working his way up to general manager in 2016, that we're done here. And we're not only done here as a general manager, but the trade deadline is right around the corner. And one would think if Jalen Phillips or Bradley Chubb or Matthew Judon are pieces that are of interest to other teams in the National Football League, and I'm not somebody like Tom Pelissero who's working phones and burning up phone lines, but I can surely tell you there'll be some interest.
Yeah, there better be for some those interest players. From my team.
And yeah. For sure, the Cowboys could use any of the three that I just mentioned. So that coaching search, that's a cart before a horse right here. That very important part of building this team for the future, when you're 2-7 and you've got pieces that you can move to other teams and accrue draft choices, that is now going to be handled, that crucial part of the business of the trade deadline talks, not by the general manager, Chris Greer, but by senior personnel executive, Champ Kelly. And, you know, we're checking to see if maybe did Ron DeSantis say he's not going to let the general manager be in charge of who's choosing
nice
the next items?
Topical.
Is that what's happening right now?
Well done.
It's going around, right?
Is that what's happening with all red state governors and football programs?
Oh, boy.
Listen, it's a choice. It's a choice. And Mike McDaniel's still the head coach, but I'll be straight up. And this is about somebody who I've become fond of.
Yeah, we really like.
Right?
Yeah.
So this is just shooting you straight, as I always do here on this program. I can't imagine, unless he wins out, like a Steve Fisher University of Michigan 1989 type run, where he wins out and they make the playoffs,
Tua turns into Ramil Robinson.
Well, or Tua, he turns into the Tua of Alabama, you know, or the Tua of the 70-20 wipeout of the Denver Broncos a couple years ago type Tua. Unless the Dolphins go on that sort of run, there's no chance a new general manager comes in and says, you know what, we're just going to keep the same thing. Let's just run it back. Let's run it back with the same coach. You know, a general manager comes in and says, I've got my own people, my own guy, unless they hire a general manager from Mike McDaniel's past and they want to keep him because Stephen Ross doesn't want to pay dead coaching money. And that's the way this is going. And it didn't help Mike McDaniel last night that his offense was moving the football up and down the field with impunity in the first half, out gaining the Ravens 226 to 109 yards while holding the Ravens offense to 1 of 6 on third down, but being down at halftime 14-6 because of a host of self-inflicted problems, like Taj Washington, the rookie, fumbling on his own 4, leading to the first of 2 Mark Andrews touchdowns. The second one came after the Dolphins marched down the field and from the Ravens' 12-yard line suffered a false start to bring on the field goal kicker. First of many times there were Amazon Prime Video cutaways of a cursing what appeared to be Mike McDaniel. And then Riley Patterson field goal wide right. And then the Ravens marched down the field for the second Mark Andrews touchdown pass from Lamar Jackson. And then 14-6 right before the end of halftime, and the Ravens getting the ball to start the second half and the Dolphins needing points, McDaniel figured he had the right play call on 4th and 2 and he's not bringing out the field goal kicker or just, you know, missed earlier, even though Riley Patterson had just made it. Regardless, he calls a play and Tua just heaves it out of bounds on what appeared to be a matchup between Achan at 5 foot whatever against Kyle Hamilton, who is, as you know, one of the tallest, toughest defenders in the league. Like, that's a one-on-one. You're going to just go a fade right there. After the game, McDaniel said there was a multitude of problems that had occurred on that play call and after the execution of it. And then down 28-6, they march down the field. The other Washington, Malik Washington, fumbles. Everybody named Washington's fumbling in this game. Tua with a pick to seal it. And it didn't help anybody that this was a Halloween night celebration, final game in October on national television stream viewership, that everybody gets to come dressed up. And so some folks showed up with paper bags and started booing their heads off. And that, you know, clearly is understandable, as Mike McDaniel noted afterwards.
Yeah, it sucks. That sucks. All of that does. But, you know, I think it's a pretty consistent formula of, you know, fans enjoy winning. And so our expectation is that we have to do the work and do the right things for fans to enjoy the experience. And unfortunately, we didn't do that tonight. So we got to get back to work to give them something to cheer about.
You know, Dolphins fans, if you're looking for somebody who's going to turn over tables and wreck the buffet and just start pounding the podium, you got the wrong guy there. And, you know, Mike McDaniel picking and choosing his million-dollar words are not what Dolphin fans want to hear, but that's the guy who he is, and it's his cerebral nature that brings about the ability to scheme an offense to march up and down the field. They just can't make it cash. They've got a quarterback who's thrown 11 picks who doesn't want to take a hit, and that's totally understandable, right? And they have players who aren't performing sharply in the most important circumstances, and then injuries. I guess everybody's got them. Tyreek Hill being out for the year doesn't help at all. But put it all together, and the Miami Dolphins next up, as he says, got to get to work to give him something to cheer about. Buffalo Bills are coming into town, and if they are coming in off a loss to the Chiefs or a win against the Chiefs, either way, they're going to have a head of steam or a massive chip on their shoulder wanting to take it out on Miami before the Dolphins fly all the way to Madrid and are going to be in the big-time international series finale, and the league in particular, very excited about the Madrid game. So there's going to be a lot of promotion around it. Hey, everybody, tune in to watch the Commanders and the Dolphins. Then there's a bye week, and then the final six games, and you're going to wonder how many people, to use a Deion Sanders phrase that I learned long ago, that when a team is no longer viable for the playoffs, players treat the game like a U-Haul game because they have the U-Haul backed up, ready to pack up for the year. Certainly, if the GM is no longer there and the guy he hired is part of a team that has 4 or 5 wins, it's brutal. The Dolphins have absolutely fallen apart this year, is what it looks like. And in terms of what Mike McDaniel says fans like winning, I mentioned Chris Greer joined the team in 2000. That is the last year in which the Dolphins made the playoffs and won a playoff game. It is 24 years and counting, it looks like, the longest playoff win drought in the National Football League. They last won on the second to last day of 2000. That's when the wild card game occurred in Miami against Peyton Manning and the Indianapolis Colts, and Dave Wannstedt's Dolphins won that game despite Jay Fiedler throwing 3 interceptions. Lamar Smith ran one in overtime to win it for the Dolphins. That's the last time they won a playoff game.
Wow.
So, Stephen Ross has got another decision to make on his coach, and I can't imagine they're going to hire a new general manager and keep the coach unless this coach's team finishes somehow. I mean, last year they started 2-6, finished 8-9, gave them a lot of belief about this season. I mean, to finish 8-9 this year, you know, That's going to be a tall order. So that's what's up there. Meanwhile, there's big news also out of the state of Florida. Travis Hunter, in a non-contact moment in practice yesterday, hurt his knee so significantly they popped him on IR. And Liam Cohen's talking about they're going to have to evaluate whether he would be available for a January playoff run. Is what he said about the second overall selection in this past year's draft. And so, cue everybody out there saying that's why you don't go and draft somebody who plays two positions, because he goes down, you lose two positions. Or that's why you don't play somebody to play two positions, because at some point in the NFL, he's going to break down. We'll find out what this was all about. But the Jacksonville Jaguars, just as they're coming back from a bye, prior to which they've lost two in a row, prior to which they didn't just lose two in a row, they were looking like they're in a fog. 10 penalties and a loss at home against Seattle, 13 penalties and a loss in London to the Rams, then a bye. Brian Thomas got hurt just before the bye. He is expected to play this week, but now all eyes will be on him on offense for sure. Now that Travis Hunter is out for the foreseeable future for the 4-3 Jaguars, who are now on the outside looking in and are the only closest object right now in the Colts' rearview mirror in the AFC South. Big games this weekend to talk about as well. I've got my top five other games to look forward to the rest of week number 9. It's a What's More Likely Friday. It's a Friday in which Tyler Warren, one of the best tight ends in the NFL this year, rookie or vet, is in the middle of hour number 2, and then a heck of an hour 3. Shaquille O'Neal of Inside the NBA, right here on ESPN, will join us to talk about everything going on in the NBA, including, wait for it, the first time ever 5-0 San Antonio Spurs, with Victor Wembanyama doing unicorn-type things there. And then after that conversation, we've got one of the stars of the third version of Now You See Me, Now You Don't. Oscar winner Morgan Freeman returns to this program. So that's how we're rolling. And also with you at 844-204-RICH, number to dial. So much to talk about with Tommy P when we come back.
The Rich Eisen Show podcast.
Avoiding your unfinished home projects because you're not sure where to start? Thumbtack knows homes, so you don't have to. Don't know the difference between matte paint finish and satin? Or what that clunking sound from your dryer is? With Thumbtack, you don't have to be a home pro. You just have to hire one. You can hire top-rated pros, see price estimates, and read reviews, all on the Thumbtack app. Download today.
100%. Back on the Rich Eisen Show here on Disney Plus, the ESPN app, and ESPN Radio, presented by Progressive Insurance. All right. Focused on the state of Florida, to say the least. Tom Pelissero joining us here in a very timely fashion. Oh, this is a look of a man who did breaking news on television. Normally, Tom's just showing up. He's in a hoodie. He's just chilling out at home for us.
Maybe a hat.
Yeah, sometimes Tom, in the Waffle House.
Tom, did you just do a hit on NFL Network, Tom?
This is not a Halloween costume right here, Rich. Yes, we did have some breaking news. I guess if there were a costume, I would be here as NFL Network's Tom Pelissero. Rich Eisen Show, Tom Pelissero. And what's up to my boys in the studio?
All right, Tom. First,
Aquaman or whatever it is. Is that George Clinton over in the corner?
No, George Clinton. By the way, that wasn't a bad choice. That's not a bad pull.
Cam Newton.
He's Cam.
Okay. Yeah, Jason Kelsey. Good. Okay. That's very solid. All right. Good Expos jersey, too.
Thank you, Tom.
Okay. So, Tommy P, let's just jump into it here, Tom. Why did there need to be a parting of the ways with the general manager after the Thursday night loss for the now 2-7 Dolphins, Tom?
From a timing perspective, Rich, it makes sense that the Dolphins would want to make this move prior to the trade deadline, which is just 4 days away, allowing somebody with perhaps a little bit different perspective to take eyes to the roster. In other words, Chris Greer, who's a very nice man and had been there for a decade, they had in that time been a 500 team that had been to the playoffs 3 times and never won a postseason game. When he was getting calls in recent weeks, by and large, His answer to teams was, no, we're trying to win. We're trying to turn this thing around. And if you're somebody who is trying to stay in your job, you would think that that might not, you know, can change in the coming days here, because you're still a 2-7, technically, mathematically alive, by turning this over now to Champ Kelly, who, in a very strange statistical twist, is becoming an interim general manager for the second time in 3 years, both on Halloween. You're going to potentially take a fresh set of eyes to the decisions that lie ahead. There have been calls on a bunch of the Dolphins' veteran players. They had gotten calls on Jalen Waddle, on Jalen Phillips, Bradley Chubb, Matthew Judon, Rasul Douglas. And in most cases, the answer they were getting from Greer was essentially like, we're not really in that mode right now. Let's see. And these are not going to be Champ Kelly making these decisions unilaterally. Certainly, you're going to need buy-in from ownership and other stakeholders, because you are the interim GM here. But let's see. I can guarantee there's going to be a new flood of calls on some of those very same names and others. Let's see how the Dolphins try to navigate this year, knowing that while they are mathematically alive, they've also got a lot of decisions to try to set themselves up in 2026 and beyond. Let's see how aggressive exactly they're going to be between now and 4 p.m. Eastern on Tuesday.
Well, the question, the follow-up question I have is, wouldn't Chris Greer then change his tune about, yeah, we're not trading anybody, if ownership said, you lose your job unless you take a different approach to the trade deadline? Or was this, best to your knowledge, ownership saying, full vote of no confidence? We just don't want you to be the one to make these trades. We're done now. Like, which one was it, do you think, Tom?
Well, Stephen Ross has a great deal of affection for Chris Greer, who's been in the organization for like a quarter century. Right. It was framed by the club as a mutual parting of ways. They had a conversation. And listen, you know, Chris Greer, I don't know that it would be entirely fair to Chris to put him in a position, much like you remember Reggie McKenzie was in his final year with the Raiders, where John Gruden had effectively taken over all things in football operations. He essentially made Reggie McKenzie trade away all of his best draft picks, including Khalil Mack, and then fired him that December. This allows Chris to walk away from it at this point, to allow people who might be around. And listen, Champ just got there. You know, he was hired this year as a senior personnel executive. I saw him briefly in training camp. You know, he may not be a part of the long-term vision either, but at least it allows there to be sort of a reset here. It certainly is going to generate more phone calls as this thing rolls forward. And the next question then becomes, is Mike McDaniel going to be a part of the club into 2026? And here's what I would say on that front, Rich. Mike is another guy that Stephen Ross believes in. He extended his contract in the prior offseason in 2024. He has shown that he can be an effective NFL coach. He has been to the playoffs. He has won games. He came into this season with a winning record. Obviously, this season has not gone his way. But take into account the broader picture of where we are right now with the Dolphins. They are locked in with Tua Tagovailoa for over $50 million fully guaranteed in 2026. And I brought this up on this show a month or so ago when questions were first really arising about Mike McDaniel's status. If you were to fire Mike McDaniel, which again, is it possible that happens? Sure. We got to see how, you know, the next couple of games go. They're in Spain in a couple of weeks. And then obviously they've got a bye and then a half dozen games after that. Let's see how the rest of the season finishes. But I would just say Tua at over $50 million fully guaranteed might not be an extremely attractive option to head coaching candidates who are coming in, especially given his medical history and the up and down state of his play through the course of 2025 here. There is certainly a scenario, and again, we will see exactly how this goes, but there is certainly a scenario in my mind where you take a vision to what's going on with the bigger football operation here, bring in a person or multiple people to try to get things right, keep Mike McDaniel for one more run with Tua, who is a quarterback who Mike got the job in part because he was the one coaching candidate back in 2022 who said, I can win with this guy. Give him one more shot with a lot of different moves in terms of personnel, with a new GM or maybe a head of football operations calling the shots here. And then you make the decisions at the end of 2026. By and large, I'm not a fan of jagged transitions. I'm a believer that if you get people who are on the same timeline and reboot the whole thing at once, that has advantages. But in a case like this, where you're tied for that much money to a quarterback that the coach has shown he can get the most out of, at least he has over the first few years that Mike and Tua were together. Don't discount the possibility here of Mike McDaniel still getting another crack at this in 2026.
Well, that's interesting because, again, so the choices would be, let's hire a new general manager and you tell the new GM, you have to keep the coach and obviously you're keeping the quarterback because that's the, you know, we're not dead capping to the tune of some insane number. And you have to wonder what general manager would take that job, or you tell a general manager, you hire whichever coach you want, but you got to tell the coach that Tua is your quarterback for at least a year. And you're implying basically what coach would want to do something like that based on what we're seeing from Tua this year. Am I missing either of the doors here for them to go through?
It quite possibly would be a deterrent to a new head coach to be told, essentially, I mean, yes, you could eat that cash and have all the cap accelerate, but that's not an ideal situation. Mm-hmm. And while I would never say any player is untradeable, I would say that Tua's contract is virtually untradeable. So barring them just cutting him, which, you know, we saw Russell Wilson, they ate a bunch of money, they took the cap hits and they dealt with it. Barring that type of a scenario, Tua is going to be the Dolphins quarterback in 2026, as long as his health permits that. A new head coach coming into that, you're talking about not a lost season, but certainly a season where you're not going to be able to affect the deep type of changes you might think that you need to make in the organization. I would say this too, and again, Chris Greer is a very nice man who I've gotten to know over the years, has always, you know, treated people around him well. But when other general managers within the league looked at what is holding back the Dolphins, one thing they always said was, it seemed like you had this collection of talent versus building a team. It was hard at times to tell what was the vision, what was the roster building plan that they felt like were going to allow the Dolphins to get into the playoffs and win a playoff game for the first time in however 20 years or so it's been for them. Even this offseason, think back to the way that Miami navigated this. They had made a decision shortly after the season last year to trade Jalen Ramsey, but they really didn't ramp that up until April. You end up not trading Jalen Ramsey until the week of the 4th of July. You do that while also trading away your tight end. You acquire a guy in Minkah Fitzpatrick who's available from Pittsburgh, in part because the tape just wasn't the same on Minkah for a couple of years. Then you acquire a Darren Waller who'd been out of football, looked great, obviously, for a few games. Then he gets hurt. In camp, everybody knew they were short on corners after trading Jalen Ramsey. You're signing Jack Jones, you're signing Roswell Douglas, and you're rolling him out there to play games. Those were all some of the factors that when people evaluated the Dolphins, it just didn't entirely make sense the way that they were approaching things. Now, that's not to say that the failures of this season are all on Chris Greer. Last night, I don't think, especially in the first half, that I sat back and said, boy, this team is at such a talent deficit, they can't hang with the Ravens. Baltimore went right down the field on the first couple of drives and scored touchdowns, but the defense rose up after that. You saw that pass rush get after it a little bit. You saw Roswell Douglas play really well in that game. Offensively, Jalen Waddle has a heck of a night, but everything else was just disjointed. 4 days before that, they'd gone into Atlanta.
Yeah, they look great.
And you said, oh, this is the team. This is the offense that we were used to seeing. Tua played really well. And then last night, it's a false start on 4th and 1. And it's a 4th and 2 play where you got Devon Achan running a route against an all-pro safety in Kyle Hamilton. And I know that they liked that matchup in terms of Achan being able to – they liked the look that they were getting. But, you know, if you were – and Mike's a lot smarter than I am with scheme, but, you know, if you're drawing this up, I don't know that I want Devon Achan running a route like a slot receiver against Kyle Hamilton with the game on the line. And then it seems like he loses the ball in the lights, which happened a few times last night. They miss a field goal. There were all these individual mistakes in the game, and that's kind of been the story of the Dolphins season. So there's a lot of different ways, Rich, that this thing can still go, and there's a lot of ways it can go in terms of Mike McDaniel. There's really not that many ways it can go with Tua. You're paying him either to be your quarterback or you're paying him to not be your quarterback, but you've got the opportunity starting in these next 4 days to potentially be aggressive. Jaylen Waddle, it would surprise me if they trade him just because look at how important he is to this team, and you've got him locked in, cost-controlled, at least in the short term here. But all the edge rushers, all the other guys you can get value from, the fact you might have a high draft pick in 2026, which also bears mentioning, Rich, right now does not look like the deepest class for franchise quarterbacks. So maybe not drafting your franchise quarterback in 2026 might actually be advantageous. Load up on picks, maximize what you're gaining in terms of draft capital, and maybe that opportunity is there in 2027.
Yeah, we talked about that with Daniel Jeremiah on yesterday's show, where he says he does not know who the first overall pick of the 2026 draft is at this point. Tom Pelissero here on the program. Let's spend a couple minutes on the Jaguars news. What happened with Travis Hunter?
He got injured in practice yesterday, and it doesn't sound great. Liam Cohen not making any guarantees that he'll even return this season. That has all the markings of one of those injuries that is likely to keep him out for an extended period. So, you know, again, this has been a bumpy rookie season. You saw flashes of what they believe Travis Hunter can do. They were set to ramp him up, especially a wide receiver. Now all of a sudden you take him off the team, and you have to wonder, for the Jaguars, you know, the upside of trading up and getting that guy at number two was, hey, we think we got a stud at wide receiver who's also going to become a stud at corner. Well, now you've got a need at both those positions right before the trade deadline. James Gladstone is a guy who loves the idea of making trades, has swung a couple already. I could see their needs and their aggressiveness potentially ramping up here in the coming days. But it does not sound like, as much as, you know, he has to miss at least four games, I don't get the sense, and again, we'll get the full readout probably today, I don't get the sense we're going to see Travis Hunter on the field again anytime soon, which is, you know, just a kind of an emotional blow as much as anything for a Jaguars team that was really looking forward to continuing to see that guy break out.
Yeah, bummer. I mean, we just saw him, you know, on NFL Network calling a game with Kurt, 100-yard game, first of his career, touchdown, first of his career. Brian Thomas expected to come back, right? Is that what we're expected to see? Because Liam Cohen said he looked great in practice this week, if not the best he's seen him this year.
That's what they're hoping.
Okay, good.
Yeah.
Any idea? Was Travis on offense or defense when this happened? During I'm serious,
great.
Man. And you know, people are going to be wondering, like, what was he doing at the time where he got hurt? Tom?
It's a great detail. I will effort the answer to that, but it was non-contact. I mean, that's right. The thing. So regardless of what position he was playing, when you're talking about a non-contact injury, that would point you toward, you know, again, I'm not speculating on this, but usually that would point you toward an ACL or a meniscus injury. Either one of those would be of the longer term type of variety. We'll see exactly what it ends up being here. But back to Brian Thomas for a second here, too. You know, he's been dealing with that shoulder. That was an issue going all the way back to college. It was one of the reasons that, you know, some teams had downgraded him a little bit on their boards. I can't tell you for certain if it's an extension of the exact same injury, but certainly him having a shoulder injury is not anything that's surprising. But to the extent that people thought, you know, that they were going to trade Brian Thomas, I have been told that there are teams that have called. It would take so much to trade Brian Thomas. There's very few players in the entire NFL that don't have a price tag. But we're talking about first-round pick and more for them to think about moving Brian Thomas. You're not going to sell low on a player who was an absolute stud as a rookie last year. I'm not anticipating, especially now with the Travis Hunter news, I'm definitely not anticipating that we're going to see Brian Thomas Jr. moving anywhere by Tuesday.
All right, so the Jets are on a bye. The Browns are on a bye. That's a 1-7 team, a 2-6 team. You have the Raiders coming off of a bye at 2-5. Let me just get this down, Pat. They are the ones who are taking on Jacksonville at home. I'm mentioning some other teams here. You've got the Cardinals coming off of a bye at the Cowboys on a Monday night. They're 2-5. The Giants are 2-6, taking on the San Francisco 49ers. Saints already at 1-7, and we are seeing them this weekend just up the road against the Rams. The reason why I bring this up is, are these the teams that we're looking at to see they're just one loss away from selling the heck out of the trade deadline or what? Give me some games and teams to look forward to seeing their result and how it plays in the trade deadline before I let you go, Tom.
As much as one game should never swing the thinking, we both know, Rich, that the recency bias coming off of that, especially if you're one of those teams either in the middle of the pack or at the bottom of the pack, can potentially tip some things. In terms of the teams you mentioned, the Raiders at this point are still, you know, when teams have called them on the likes of Jacoby Myers, the prices are still really high. Do they soften that? to try to move players who are probably not part of the future over the next 4 days? Does whatever happens on Sunday influence it? I would certainly think it potentially influences it. But Pete Carroll is also of the mind that they're trying to get this thing going right now. If they weren't, they wouldn't assign 30-odd-year-old Tyler Lockett to come in and play with his buddy Geno Smith. But certainly teams are monitoring some of those. I don't anticipate Max Crosby is going anywhere. They called him in, sat him down when there were some rumors last week on the internet and told him, like, hey, we're not trading you. We're not listening. We're not shopping you. We're not doing it. Max doesn't want to go anywhere. He wants to be in Vegas, just signed an extension. So I'm not anticipating anything happens with him. For New Orleans, that's another team that's in that mix. Mickey Loomis is always, and I'll put this kindly, a little on the difficult side to deal with. He doesn't want to get trade calls. He doesn't want to sell off his best players. He's been known to hang up the phone on people if he's not thrilled about the names that they're bringing up. I don't see Chris Olave going anywhere. The price on Rashid Shaheed is really high right now, but that I would say is a name to keep in mind. And Brandon Cooks, they would be willing to trade, you know, an older player. There's just not a ton of action right now on Brandon Cooks. They've gotten calls on Alante Taylor as well. But again, price is really high. That's the common thread, Rich, that you're going to hear with a lot of the guys that are available, even the players that Tennessee has available. If you're talking about really good players, the prices on a lot of these guys right now are day two picks. It's a third rounder for a lot of the receivers' names that you're hearing thrown about, where the teams that are looking to make those trades don't really want to part with more than a fourth or a fifth. And so do some of those things. Do the Titans soften their price on a Calvin Ridley and potentially see him moving here? The Giants, I have not gotten the sensor in sell mode. I know my colleague Mike Garofolo reported they've gotten calls on Kayvon Thibodeau. They have not wanted to trade him. He would be the logical trade piece if you were going to deal anybody. So I'm not really bracing for anything major of substance there. And then you got a team like the Jets that's on a bye right now. They actually do have a bunch of players that would make sense, but they're not going to take pennies on the dollar. The name that I would continue to keep an eye on would be Quinnen Williams, their defensive tackle. And that's not because they're actively trying to trade Quinnen Williams. It's more so because, yeah, we can talk about the Breece Halls of the world, but if you're getting offered a fourth-round pick for Breece Hall, which clears virtually no money off your books and he's your best player on offense, why would you look to just offload that guy? He might still be there. You might be able to get an extension done with him. Quinnen Williams is a guy who's still young, especially at a position where you can play for a long time, but you would be getting potential value here. The price on Quinnen Williams would be, I would anticipate, a first-round pick and more. You actually might have offers in that range for Quinnen Williams. And if you're looking to accelerate your rebuild, making those types of big, bold decisions is one way that you can do it. So I would keep an eye on the Jets with some of those big names. Jermaine Johnson to a certain degree as well. I just don't believe you're going to get the same value, not a first-round pick and more for him. So keep an eye on that. They're not actively shopping Quinnen Williams. It would not shock me if at minimum they have the type of offers put in front of them sometime in the next 4 days that give them something to think about prior to Tuesday.
Tom, thanks for all the information. And also, you and I go way back now, Tom, so I'm not going to take it personally that you've confirmed you would never show up for this show dressed as nicely as you do today because you're coming off of a hit for NFL Network. I won't take that personally, okay?
You know, I thought we were all dressing down. I don't see in a shirt and tie, Rich.
No.
TJ technically is wearing a tie today. It's the first tie I've ever seen on this show. I thought you were in a tie option.
Okay, you're right. You're right. My bad. And by the way, I'm just to talk about how professional I am, I have conducted this entire interview without batting an eye, despite TJ Jefferson. I looked over. He's not wearing pants, and he's got boots on. You know, I mean, this is just a jarring sight. To say the least, Tom. So I'm at least sharing this with you because I just need to share it with somebody. My goodness gracious.
He's really evolving over there. Now the Expos jersey is very prominent. He's a formal Gary Carter right now.
Ladies and gentlemen, Tom Pelissero. Well done. Good pull. That's NFL Network's Tom Pelissero. I'll see you on Sunday for NFL Game Day morning. That's Tom.
Tom
right
here. Live in Detroit.
There you go. Very good. He'll be against Detroit and the Lions and the Vikings. Very good.
Yes,
that's Tommy P right here. So lots to talk about. We'll hit the Ravens. I've got my top five other games that I'm looking forward to seeing. It's a What's More Likely Friday. Shaquille O'Neal and Morgan Freeman and Tyler Warren all still to come.
The Rich Eisen Show, the podcast.
ESPN Radio is presented by Progressive Insurance, supporting you every step of the way. Progressive.com. All right, everybody. The phone lines. Should we take a phone call or two right here on the program? Mike in New York City is here on the Rich Eisen Show. What's up, Mike?
Hey, Rich. How's it going? It's my birthday, and I've been calling for a while, so I wanted to call.
Hey, Mike, your birthday is on Halloween? You were born on Halloween?
Yeah, very spooky stuff.
Oh, my.
Happy birthday, bro.
Very spooky stuff.
Awesome.
Indeed. Okay.
What are you doing tonight?
Yeah.
Thank you. I wanted to, as a birthday present, I wanted to play a little Overreaction Monday on Halloween edition.
Okay.
Do you think that the Ravens are going?
Hold on a second. I just saw because I can see what our control room is up to. Crack staff, Mike Hoskins and Don Bowie. Go ahead and hit it. Hit it.
That was terrible.
That was crap. That was garbage. This place sucks.
Overreaction
Mondays.
Monday.
On a Friday.
On a Friday.
Okay, Mike, what do you got?
Yeah. After, I don't know, two straight wins, they have a soft second half schedule. I think the Ravens are going to win the AFC North, and not only that, I think they're going to make the Super Bowl.
Okay, Mike in New York City.
That's hot.
That's an overreaction Monday on
that
a Friday.
Is
although
hot.
We have been, and you could take the music down. We have been, if you are a fan of the pod, and hopefully you are, we have been, I've been talking about the Ravens going on a run for a few weeks now.
Yeah.
And last night on the Prime Video broadcast, they had the AWS numbers up on the screen, which mirror the LASVEGAS numbers as well, right? On whether the Ravens are going to win the division. Am I correct, Christopher? Right?
Yeah, sure. So the Ravens are the favorite to win the North right now. They're -145. They also have the fourth best odds to win the AFC.
Jeez. At 3-5.
They're nine to one.
So there you go.
9-1.
There you go. Happy birthday. We just gave you those numbers just to back up your statement, Mike. Happy birthday.
Thank you.
You got it.
Thank you, Rich. I appreciate it.
You got it. That's Mike in New York City calling in on his birthday, born on Halloween.
He didn't say win the Super Bowl, but the Ravens are 18-1 to win the Super Bowl.
Let me ask you a question. Top five holidays you wouldn't want to be born on.
Oh,
Christmas.
Christmas, that's number one.
Is that it's like Family Feud? Top five answers on the board. Here's your question.
New Year's Day. Yeah, definitely.
Well, New Year's Eve. New Year's Day is no big deal. Everyone's off. You can go hang out and do something.
Everyone's recovering.
Listen, birthdays are all, there's an eye in birthday for a reason. You know what I mean? It's your day. You want it to be about you and your birth and your celebration of life and your celebration of friendship and who you are, right?
I mean,
and you want to have your friends around and say, invite me, come over to my house for my birthday. Let's go out to dinner for my birthday. Or hopefully somebody's inviting you. Let's put it that way. Let's take you to your birthday party. But I can't. It's Halloween, trick or treat. Oh, New Year's Eve. I'm not doing that. Christmas Eve.
Yeah.
Right? Or Christmas Day. Everybody's opening up presents.
Christmas Day is clear number one. You do not want to be born on Christmas Day.
Absolutely. Well, give me two more.
No chance.
Leap year.
Oh, yeah.
February 29th, not a great.
That's not a holiday, though.
Yeah.
Valentine's Day.
Valentine's Day, definitely not.
You know what I mean? That could be very sad.
I think Thanksgiving is up. It's probably an unrated one to be born on. That seems pretty fun. Football and food. Happy birthday. Here's a giant turkey and some pie.
Yeah, here's your yam.
I think any day in November, really. Because if you did the math backwards and you figure out that it was Valentine's Day when you got made, and that would probably mess you up a little bit.
Wow. Didn't even think of that.
TJ going next level.
Oh my goodness.
That's what can be.
The Rich Eisen Show, the podcast.